My number one album. Big shocker to me. Also Folklore.
Whoa.
Are you ready to dive into all things Taylor Swift?
Good for a Weekend is the ultimate podcast for any Swiftie.
With new episodes dropping bi-monthly, as well as bonus episodes to give you real-time reactions to the latest rumors and news, it's your one-stop shop for all things T-Swift.
We also love connecting with our fellow Weekenders, so be sure to connect with us on Instagram, Twitter, and or Discord to share all your Taylor thoughts.
Good for a Weekend is available wherever you get your podcasts. I know.
Lamar just is... That, like, it's a perfect album.
Hello, and welcome to Long Time No See, the podcast. Each week, we'll be pairing two blindfolded comedians who've agreed to sit down with a mystery guest. I'll be putting them on the spot with a series of questions about their careers, lives, and opinions. Without further ado, please remove your blindfolds and introduce yourself.
Hey, I'm Michael.
Hi, Andrea.
I have to be honest with you, I am so relieved to see it's you.
Do you have any irrational fears? What's the worst fad you were into? Is there any job that you would be terrible at?
Underwater welder?
Don't say that about yourself.
Do you guys have any useless talents?
I kicked one of those delivery robots.
Got what? You kicked one?
Yelling. I kick those all the time.
They have names on them.
Good.
I can make smoke come out of my mouth with nothing.
Do it.
You want to see it?
What the f***? Are you a dragon?
Out now, Long Time No See the Podcast, Season 2. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Consequence Podcast Network. Welcome to Going There, the crossroads where music and mental health meet. This season of Going There is brought to you by Johnson & Johnson, who believes that health is everything. Their strength in healthcare innovation empowers them to build a world where complex diseases are prevented, treated, and cured, where treatments are smarter and less invasive, and solutions are personal. Through their expertise in innovative medicine and medtech, they are uniquely positioned to innovate across the full spectrum of healthcare solutions today to deliver the breakthroughs of tomorrow and profoundly impact health for humanity. Learn more at www.jnj.com, at Janssen US, and at JNJINNOVMED on Twitter. Today we are talking with singer, songwriter, musician Jim James, founding member and front person of the Grammy-nominated rock band My Morning Jacket. You may know My Morning Jacket from their songs Wordless Chorus, Golden, and One Big Holiday. Their music has been described as mystical country rock and beautifully hypnotic. They have a new album out called Is, featuring the song Time Waited. My Morning Jacket begins an American tour in early August, including the September 5th Hopscotch Music Festival in Raleigh, North Carolina. Check out their music, tour info, and merch at mymorningjacket.com. Now, on the Going There podcast, we have the tough conversations to address important issues so we can learn from each other, challenge the stigma of mental illness, and get the care we need. And one issue that often arises for those of us who struggle with our mental health is the issue of trusting ourselves. Now, trust can mean different things to different people. Do we trust that we know who we are and what we want in the world? Will we always have our best interests at heart? Can we predict how we will feel, think, or behave in a given situation well enough to give ourselves the best chance to achieve our goals? If we trust in ourselves in those ways, we feel more grounded and more self-assured on our mental health journey. Now, the problem is that when we struggle with our mental health, including issues such as depression, anxiety, addiction, or eating disorders, we will have experiences that interfere with that trust. We may not always understand who we are, what we want, or how to get what we want in the world. And even if we do, those goals may not always be at the forefront of our minds. We may have other competing agendas, such as catering to an addiction that will not allow us to focus on our goals, or competing with anxious thoughts. Whether we are in a depressive episode, having a panic attack, or binging on food or other substances can radically shift how we feel, think, or act in a given situation. And so we don't always trust ourselves that we will follow through on what's best for us long-term or even short-term. And Jim talks about his coping with depression and how he has struggled with trusting himself and how embracing a caretaker part of himself helped him develop trust and manage depression. Now, as we progress through this season of Going There, our goal is to bring you, the audience, further into the conversation. We'd love to hear your feedback, questions you have that have been sparked by our conversations with these incredible artists, and topics you'd love to see addressed. If you enjoy the show, please leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. These help other folks find their way into the conversation so they can go there with us. So let's go there and listen to what Jim has to say. Hey, Jim, welcome to Going There.
How's it going?
It's doing good. You and I talked beforehand about your journey living with depression. And why don't we just start there and talk about, you know, when you first recognized the depression, what it felt like, and the different things that you've tried to do to cope with it.
Well, isn't it interesting that we're all trying to figure out, like, what our what the meaning of life is, what why we're here, you know, why things are the way we are. And for me, I feel like depression is a combination of a lot of things. And I think, obviously, when we're younger, we don't really understand a lot of what's happening to us. You know, we're just trying to process it. And I feel like ever since I was capable of consciousness, I always felt this sadness or this thing in me that was, you know, it's hard to even put words to it, but there was always something, some error going on in my programming. There's always something, even as a little kid, I remember feeling like really, really deep sadness or deep connection with like sad music. I remember like just kind of always feeling like I didn't belong wherever I was, like I just didn't fit in, or I wasn't, you know, round peg in a square hole or whatever you want to call it. And it's interesting as you grow from a child into an adolescent and you start to have more words and you have to start to have more experiences or meet friends who may be having the same experiences. I feel like I kind of came into this knowing of depression as several of my other friends experienced it in different forms and had their different routes that their parents were sending them on. And that kind of all timed with the rise of grunge music and Kurt Cobain and this whole thing that was happening in that moment in time that's so fascinating, where we were kind of like, so this thing, you know, we'll call it depression or whatever, you know, we're looking at our heroes like Kurt Cobain or whatever, and you're like, oh, okay, they suffer from it too. You know, this is something that somehow is creating this beautiful art, and we can also use as a connection to bond together with each other. You know, that's something that we can share. So it's interesting how it kind of turns into a despite its difficulties in some ways, it gives you this beautiful bonding, you know, if you and other people are open to it. And I was really lucky to have friends. I mean, lucky is a funny word because I wish none of us suffered from depression. But, you know, I was lucky to have those friendships where we could share our experiences and stuff. I met those friends in fourth grade, and then we kind of, some of them I'm still friends with to this day, but we were able to kind of start going through the seventh, eighth grade, you know, journey into adolescence and depression. And yeah, it's just so interesting. I still don't know any definitive answers, but one thing I feel like I'm realizing more and more is there's some reason that my soul chose to take this form in this place, this time. And I think that there are reasons in there, and depression, whatever it is, because it runs in my family. It's also genetic. You know, there's that side of it too. There's the medical, chemical side of it. There's the spiritual, mystical side of it. You know, there's all so many ways to look at it. The more and more we can learn to listen to our true soul's voice, you know, that's called your conscience or your inner voice. I feel like there's this place that we come from that none of us can understand this lifetime. We're not supposed to be able to understand it, or this whole thing would be pointless. But we're given a map from the place we come from, beyond this form, you know, beyond me being this person called Jim in this life or whatever. There's my true soul's essence, and it's giving me this map all the time of like my true heart's wishes or whatever. And it's just so funny how much the world tries to tell us not to listen to that, you know, or second guess it, or that's not, well, oh God, that's not true. That can't be true. You know, it's like, I feel like that's kind of all of our journey, because all of our maps are different and we all have different things to accomplish and do. But it's interesting when you get the world and your depression or whatever that makes you constantly second guess your true soul's voice, you know, that you hopefully can try to listen to more and more as you grow. But yeah, it is just supremely fascinating trying to figure it all out.
You know, one of the things that we talked about a little bit before was, you know, you guys covered Nothing Else Matters by Metallica and that lyric, forever trusting who we are. To me, that's, I don't know the original intent of the lyric, but that's very powerful from a mental health perspective, because everything colludes when we have depression to not trust who we are. Because you don't, if who you are is sad and depressed, it's often uncomfortable. You, as you said, you feel isolated, and there's tons of people who are constantly telling you, cheer up, you know, look on the bright side, all these things. So everything is colluding to not trust that this is a meaningful part of who you are. And it is so difficult, I think, on our mental health journey to trust ourselves, like you said, to listen to who we are, especially in that context, because it often just doesn't feel good.
Yeah, I know, that is the hardest part. I think there's something about, you know, and obviously this is a highly individual thing, because nobody else knows what's going on inside your head, but you, right? But it's like this, I love that line, because I feel like forever trust in who you are. I feel like, to me at least, that speaks to that voice inside your conscience or whatever that is the observer. You know, there's so many words that people use to try and attempt to label it, but I really do believe that there is this force that we're all connected to that, you know, it's like the waves in the ocean thing or whatever. You know, we're all part of the same ocean, but we're also our own unique little wave, you know, and we all make up the whole thing. And there's this this beautiful true nature that we all possess that does come out in that little voice in us. But whatever the building blocks of a person's genetic or chemical makeup or their circumstances in the world, their physical body, their whatever their family situation is like, however these things are all combining, it is like some kind of crazy quest or epic quest or something, you know, to just somehow listen to your truth, you know, because your truth is in there, you know, but it's like it gets so sliced up by the world. And I think that music is a real, for me at least, music's been a real lifesaver, because I feel like that's been one of the ways that I could try to hold on to my truth, is through music or whatever, even when the rest of the world doesn't make sense, or even when I hated myself so much or just had so much self-loathing, there was something about music that I could kind of always at times cling to like a life raft or whatever, you know, to just make it over the make it through the next day or whatever. But yeah, it's so complex.
Yeah, when you're talking about music, I'm kind of curious. You mentioned grunge as one potential option, but what, whether it's a genre or artist or a song or an album that you really look back on and said, okay, when I was trying to connect with myself and I was trying to explore my truth, I didn't feel like I was getting any validation for it. I listened to this or this person or this artist, whatever, and I felt more connected. I felt like somehow that it was more truth there.
Oh God. I mean, so many things, you know, I remember as a kid, my parents, weren't like big music fans or anything. They didn't have, but they listened to the radio and, you know, music was on. And I remember, you know, my one of my first memories is hearing like When You Wish Upon a Star, you know, as a kid, and hearing that I don't know how long it's been since you've listened to the original recording of that, but that recording is one of the most insanely beautiful pieces of music you'll ever hear, you know, and it is, it deals with so much about believing in your dreams and following your heart and all this stuff. And I just remember this thing of like, that like reached out to me, like Carole King, So Far Away or something like that, you know, or It's Too Late. You know, some of these songs that like reach out to me through the radio, or I remember hearing, Neil Young Unplugged on the radio one night. I would just listen to the radio in my bedroom with the volume down way low, you know, after everybody had gone to bed as a kid. And I remember that feeling of Neil Young's voice kind of reaching out and pressing my heart, you know, and that definitely Kurt Cobain, you know, his magic combined with his pain or whatever, I think, touched so many of us in this wild way, you know, that Kurt Cobain for me was the first time I thought it would be possible that I could make music. You know, it's like Kurt Cobain and probably REM, because I feel like everything else to me seemed out of my reach. Like it was too, I'd never be able to do it, you know, kind of thing. But then when I saw REM and I saw Nirvana, I was like, whoa, okay, maybe I can, like, so normal people can make music too. You know, you don't have to be in a hair metal band, or you don't have to, you know, have some, these things that seem so out of reach to a young kid from Kentucky. Yeah, that was the first time when I was like, oh, maybe this can be a gateway out, you know, of this, these feelings that I have that I don't belong anywhere.
Yeah, it was interesting. The reason why I laughed was because I literally was just listening to So Far Away before.
Oh, man. Yeah.
And if I'm not listening to that, I'm usually listening to the unplugged version of Old Man or
yeah,
Where Did You Sleep Last Night, the cover of that.
Yep.
Yeah, the So Far Away and the Wish Upon a Star kind of resonated, because there's, when you think about, and I it's been a very long time since I've heard that song, but the premise, at least from what it seems like, is that, you know, it's this kind of common lullaby or this common song. It's like all of these kids are just sitting there alone, looking at, in theory, the same thing in the sky. Right. And so there's that. And then when you think of So Far Away, it's again, it's that there's that beautiful sense of isolation and that reaching for connection. It's very similar to that reaching for the star thing. And to me, good music does both of those things. It sort of validates the sense of being alone, but it's kind of like got one foot in that, but it's also got one foot in, but what if everybody is alone at the same time and is looking a little bit towards the same thing, like what you're talking about, like there's a sort of commonality in being alone.
Yeah, I think that's why we all relate to it so deeply. I think that's why when you hear Carole King sing that song, you're touched so profoundly, because you know she feels how you feel. You know that she knows, you know, and that I think there are those reminders of our true nature, of our true soul's way or whatever, and those reminders are love itself and music. You know, there are these reminders that kind of come through that's like, we can't tell you all the answers or this would be pointless, but here's a little reminder of what you really are beyond this human challenge. Because this human challenge is so important and it's so sacred, but also it's so brief and it's over like that. You know, it's like each human lifetime in the span of the time of the universe or whatever is nothing. You know, it's like less than a grain of sand. So somehow I feel like we have to come to terms with how quick this all goes by and how important it all is. But it simultaneously, like, how can we get out of these traps and try and enjoy it more? And I think one way we can do that is to really try to do like we're doing and talk about the tough stuff. You know, like talk about depression, talk about this stuff so that people know, just like we were talking about with Carole King reaching into your heart when she sings that song. I feel like we can all kind of do that for each other with these type of podcasts and with music and stuff, to let people know that it's perfectly normal to feel depressed or to feel lonely or to feel the blues or whatever you want to call it. And I think it's real important for us to keep like keep these conversations going so people know if they're struggling, that's okay. You can get through it. You know, you can find help in your friends. You can find the right therapist. You can find whatever it is that you need. It's out there, but it's hard to find it sometimes. You know, and I think that's why it's important for us to have these conversations so people can like, maybe somebody will accidentally hear this podcast and somehow they'll stumble upon some resource that's really helpful for them. But yeah.
So let's talk with that in mind. Let's talk about the things that have either been helpful or not helpful for you on that journey. Because again, like you said, and I think it's so important, it's wonderful that there are treatments out there that have received empirical support and are studied and it's really thorough. And that is fantastic. It's so necessary, I think, for our field. But at the end of the day, it's often just sort of a guide as to, okay, where should you begin potentially? You know, like what are the most high, based on the science, what's the most high percentage chance that something will work? But at the end of the day, it's often you trying different things until you come up with exactly the right mix for you. And so, you know, like you said, when having these conversations, when someone like yourself sort of talks about, well, here's how I went through the process, it could be very helpful for people. So, you know, if you feel comfortable just talking about like, all right, I tried this, it worked, it didn't, this really worked for me, these are the things I continue to do.
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing it's important, for us to say is like, people need to know that it's okay to seek help. You know, that's, it doesn't make you weak. It doesn't mean you're a failure. You know, there's all these things. I feel like our society and generational too, there's a lot of people that are like, therapy, I don't need that. I don't need, that's for losers or whatever, you know. And luckily, I've never felt that way personally, because I probably in high school at some point was not when I first started trying to see therapists or trying to do those kind of things. And I think a person has to give themselves permission to know that they're worth doing the work. You know, I think there's a little hurdle to get over in there, because oftentimes if you're depressed or if you're full of self-loathing and you're like, what the fuck does it all mean anyway? What's the point of doing any of this? I think there's like if there's some way you can do almost like just a little sidestep or whatever, where you're like, okay, I'm feeling these ways and I respect how I'm feeling, but also I'm going to give myself permission to try and find some help to see if things can be different. You know, it's like you have to kind of hold both. And I tell people a lot, like, I mean, I've probably seen, I don't know, 50 therapists over the course of my life, because it is hard to find the right therapist sometimes. And I think I tell people, because I talk about this a lot, most therapists will usually give you a 15-minute consultation for free, you know? So I tell people to like get on their Psychology Today or get on whatever. There's like BetterHelp. There's all these kind of websites now where you put in your zip code, therapists come up. I know money is a big concern for people, because our healthcare system is such a joke, and especially when it comes to mental health. But I try to tell people too, there's usually hopefully a few people in your area or even remotely that might do sliding scale systems or whatever, so you could maybe still get the help you need even if you don't have the financial resources. And those things aren't easy to find. You have to search for those things. But I think if you can somehow put a little side box in your consciousness or whatever, that's like, okay, it's okay for me to do this work because it might help, even though I'm feeling like I fuck it all and this is like, you know, there's something. Somehow I was able to do that, and I still sometimes don't know how, because there's so many points in my life where I was like near suicidal or, you know, just like, what the fuck is the point of anything? But somehow, and maybe it was like my dad's work ethic or something that was like back there in some corner of my brain going, well, okay, you can say that, but let's still see if we can find our way out of this or whatever. But so that's kind of like the first thing I would say is like, let yourself start doing that kind of work, to find somebody to talk to. Obviously, if you have friends that you trust, talk to them. You know, like if you have family members or whatever, talk to them. I think that's kind of the first thing, is getting out of your head. You know, because we're all trapped in our head, and we think we're the only one, and we think we're all messed up or whatever. And it's not like that's not true, but also everybody's going through something. You know, and I think the more we remember that, every person you see is going through something, you know, in their own way, whatever it is, you know, and they might project on the outside this image that they're fine or that everything's great or whatever, but everybody's got something that's going on. So I think that's usually the thing. And over the course of time, I found that talking and getting it out, letting the steam out of the bottle, is the most surefire way. Because there's all these other things you can do, and we can talk about whatever we want to talk about, but it's like the one thing that you need with all of it is to keep letting the steam out of the bottle and keep talking about it. Because no matter what you do, if you do healing retreats, or if you do psychedelic therapies, or if you do it's different experiences, or if you do medication, or whatever you're doing, there are all these little experiences that all end. You know, everything is gonna end. And but the more we can move the energy, and the more we can talk, we can create this force that kind of gets us more in touch with our true nature, which is, at least as far as I can tell, is so endless and so beautiful beyond this human form. You know, and I think that's why there are these ways that we can find to deal with energy that kind of take us outside of the human form and put us back in touch with our true soul's nature, to kind of remember who we are beyond this challenging human realm.
It's interesting you're talking about that, because, and you can tell me what I read was accurate, but you're talking about working with Brendan O'Brien on this last album, obviously an artist, you know, a producer who did, you know, some wonderful albums from the grunge era and others. But this idea of wanting to be both the coach and the star player, right? And one of the things that can be very difficult in our mental health journey, as I'm sure it is as an artist, is the idea that, like, well, I have these conceptions of who I am, what I'm about, and again, that trusting myself. And it's like, when do you push against other people, and when do you let people in a little bit? And I think that both in a creative and mental health journey, that can be very difficult. Like, if you're sitting there thinking to yourself, there's no hope, it's never going to get better, I'm not worthy of this, how do you open up just a little bit to consider that that may not be the whole story?
You know? Well, that's so funny, yeah, because I feel like it took me pretty much my entire life's work of therapy to even get to the place where I could open myself to working with somebody like Brendan. Because for me, my particular challenge was that I felt I was so worthless and so disgusting, and so there's so much self-loathing. And because I had music in my life, I always thought that if I could only get the world to love me through my music, then somehow I could love myself, because it was now okay to love myself, because now the world, instead of bullying me or telling me I was a piece of shit or telling me I was ugly or whatever it used to tell me my whole life, if I could somehow get the world to tell me I'm awesome because I play awesome music, then I could love myself. But, you know, we all know, as we say that or whatever, that that doesn't work. That's not the way that you find it. But I was so lost in the experience of Jim. I was so lost in this life that I had forgotten that there's a deeper soul behind Jim. There's a deeper thing that is my true essence that is experiencing Jim this lifetime, but that's not who I am, you know, but that's why we come here and take these human forms. The whole point of it is to forget that, and we get so lost in the human experience. And I think part of the puzzle is us trying to remember our true form beyond the human experience, but that's so difficult. And I feel like For me, it was a series of events of finally finding a therapist and doing EMDR and parts work with him. And I've been seeing him for about 4 or 5 years now, and I still see him. That was a huge game changer. And doing several different psychedelic therapies like ayahuasca and ketamine therapy were big things for me. But I feel like those psychedelic therapies without the traditional talk therapy in there to sustain it all, I feel like they were important points, but without the connection, I don't feel like they would sustain. You know, I think that's kind of a mistake that people can make, and that I've made many times in my life too, is thinking, oh, if I go do this retreat, or if I go do this ayahuasca or whatever, then everything will be awesome. I'll find my true nature and it'll all be great. And it's like, you can really find some great insights in all of these different things, but you need to keep connecting it and sustaining it or whatever. You know, you can't just like go do this ayahuasca once and now everything's great. You know, it's like it's all pieces of a larger puzzle.
And one of the things, I don't know if I have this quote right, but I feel like I read that Jimi Hendrix said something to the effect of, I don't like compliments. I find them distracting.
Yeah.
And the idea of what you were talking about before, you know, if I just get people to like my music, they'll love me. Now, for most people, that concept gets squashed pretty quickly because, you know, they aren't able to pursue their music, or they're not getting a response, right?
Yep.
What's to some degree a little bit more challenging and arguably more seductive is, well, what happens if you are getting all of that praise,
right?
If you are getting all of that love, and then how do you in that context say, no, this, I have to integrate this somehow into me, but I can't jump into that world where now that defines me, in the same way that you're talking about, well, the ayahuasca can't define me, the ketamine can't define me, the EMDR can't define me. I have to keep thinking about this in the context of me. That's very difficult to do when you've got all these people buying albums, fans at shows, people coming up to you. It's like it's in some ways it's just as difficult as if it never happens, because then it's easier to see, well, I'm not going to get the love this way, right? Because the music's not connecting with people. But if it is, that's tougher to be able to push back.
The funny thing, though, at least in my experience, is it's never enough. It's never good enough. You know, it's like, for me at least, I think if I think of myself now, and I don't understand my infinite true soul's nature, you know, like I can only touch the tip of the iceberg of what my truth is or whatever. But I like to think now that my true soul is riding this horse named Jim. And for the longest time, I was lost in Jim and thought Jim was the beginning and the end of it all. And that I was so lost in this experience of being Jim, with so much self-loathing and so much depression and so much. And I kept thinking like, okay, if I play guitar really good, if I write really good songs, then people will love me. Then I'll see that it's okay to love me. And then I can love me. But it's like, and so for most of my life, in my early life, nobody ever liked any of the music I was making. They always thought my band sucked, and we were always, you know, it never. But then when it started taking off, it still was never enough. Because each little step that we would make, I'd be like, yeah, that's cool, but we're not as big as Nirvana. You know, it's like, and it's like every little thing that we did, it still was never enough. Because I was so lost in this feeling that Jim isn't good enough. And it's like, so once, oh, and this has only happened for me in the last 4 or 5 years. Once I've started to try, I feel like we all need to give ourselves the gift that nobody can take away, and that's self-love, you know? So I started to try and to realize that, okay, I've been spending most of my life hating being on this horse named Jim. I want to get the fuck off of it. I want to drink it off. I want to, you know, drug it off. I want to fuck it off. You know, whatever it is, I want to get off this thing because I don't like it. And I had this realization. It's like, okay, you've been doing that for 40 years. That's not working for you. What if we try the other direction? What if you try to treat Jim with love and kindness, and treat Jim with respect, and try to go the other way, you know, and let's try and take care of Jim. Let's try and feed Jim properly, get Jim some rest, stop drinking, stop pouring alcohol onto Jim. Like all of these little things that I could only start to see because of the EMDR therapy I was doing, the psychedelic therapies I experienced. I got started to get all these little glimpses that I'm the caretaker for this lifetime, however long it may be, of this being named Jim. And if I can wake up enough, I can realize that, like, it's my sacred duty to try and love this person. Because if I can do that, then I can be of greater service to the world, and I can be more kind to other people, and I can serve other people, and I can serve the world better, because I'm not so busy trying to destroy this vest, this vehicle, this body that I'm in, this lifetime. And that for me has been a huge thing, because it's like, I'm starting to give myself this gift of this love that nobody can take away from me. You know, it doesn't matter how many records we sell or don't sell, doesn't matter this or that, all these external things, I can kind of retain and hold on to my own self-love. And it's not like that's just a thing that happens and then it's over either. That's a constant battle. You know, that's a constant up and down roller coaster of, you know, one day I'm like not feeling so good about being Jim anymore. And then the next day I'm like, all right, man, let's talk about it. Let's talk about it with your friends or talk about it with your therapist. What's bugging you today? What is, you know, it's like, because I think everybody, I know that everybody has that ability to do that. But depending on your life's map or your life's plan, you know, everything takes different paths and different courses. And sometimes it takes how many lifetimes, you know, many, many lifetimes, many, many experiences through this thing to find a way to love ourselves. And it's a difficult journey, but it's a journey I believe everybody can make, everybody can do.
It's interesting that you're talking about this concept of a caretaker. I really like that idea. One of the things I try to talk about with people that I work with is the only unique thing you have to offer the world is you.
Yep.
And there's got to be, to some degree, an ongoing process. Like almost every theory of psychology has something about like the self and other, like, you know, the me and the connecting. And those things kind of go hand in hand. But that concept of being the caretaker, and what does it mean to be a caretaker, right? What does it mean to love? And this idea of like, well, each time you learn something, right, about yourself, it's sort of like, well, look, is loving oneself is like, you know, being good to oneself is often experimenting. So you try the drinking. You know, for a lot of people, as an example, like drinking starts off as a form of self-love because it's fun and it connects you with people and it makes you feel good. And then over time, you start seeing the effects of it. You start like being like, well, it may have started out that way, but it's kind of morphed into something different now. And can you be open and curious enough? So one of my early supervisors would always talk about being curious, not critical, about the idea that like, well, can you see that that might have changed? And I think that when people sometimes talk about self-love, they don't talk about it in being open to change. It's like you either have to love yourself and stay the same or hate yourself and change. And I think that one of the things is that you're talking about with a therapeutic process is part of loving yourself, part of being the caretaker of Jim is like constantly like looking at and evaluating and reevaluating, hey, which of these things are working? Sleeping more rather than less, eating healthier rather than not drinking as much as drinking, like which of these are getting Jim closer to that spiritual essence, of which ones are bringing it farther away? And that simple question, I think can so many things become clear. You know, is this person making you feel more like yourself or the person you want to be as opposed to less?
Yep.
To know how much connection you should have with them? Or is this therapeutic process, you know, it's like, well, is it feeling good or is it feeling bad? But I know that it's feeling bad because it's getting me somewhere. You know, there's those. Is it getting me closer or farther from that spiritual essence? I personally like that as a, how do you feel about that in terms of the caretaker, like kind of doing that kind of work?
Yes, and I feel like the only way we can become better and better caretaker is to listen to that voice inside of us that is our true soul's voice. And I think through meditation or through therapy or through, again, kind of saying to yourself, it's okay that I have problems. It's okay that I'm depressed. It's okay that I deal with these things. I'm going to talk about them and try to find a way, yeah, to become a better caretaker, to become a better guardian of this vessel that I'm in this time. And I think it's obviously it's just so highly specific for each person, because even when you come to drinking or something like that, it's like some people aren't alcoholics and can have a drink or two and it's fine. Other people can't, you know. And I think for me, I'm an alcoholic. I have it in my programming, and I never drank to have fun. I drank to destroy. You know, I drank to erase. You know, for me, drinking was the eraser, because it's like I did not want to be Jim. I did not want to be here, but I didn't even, you know, I couldn't kill myself. I was like, how the fuck do I get out of this thing? Bam! You know, you drink enough, you're gone, you know, and you hand over the keys to the tequila bottle and it drives the car. You know, it's like that's the, so I think, yeah, that was a big one for me when I began to step back and into my soul's and kind of be the observer more and the witness. I saw myself making all these excuses about drinking and making, because I'm a very functional alcoholic, and I have a genetic disposition where I don't ever black out. And the more and more I drink, the more and more everything seems to be more and more awesome, you know. And it's like I had this realization where I was like, oh my God, man, like, how can you ever sit around and moan and groan about not being happy or not finding your truth or whatever if you're drinking yourself to death all the time? You know, it's not a healthy thing. So yeah, that's a thing where it's like, I think the more time we spend letting the steam out of the bottle and talking about these things, the more we kind of will see them and be a better caretaker. Cause then you can kind of, cause before I was so lost in the insanity of it all, I couldn't see it, you know, and I couldn't climb out of it. And I think that's one of the things for everybody, is like, we need to start to wake up so that we can begin to see these things with a clear mind, you know, or a clear heart or whatever, where you're like, have more of a, so you can be a better caretaker, because you see and you're like, you're witnessing, okay, Jim is like pouring all of this alcohol into himself to erase himself. That's not a healthy thing to do. So like, let's try and not do that.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that I think is so powerful about recovery programs is that when people have gone through that or in the process of going through that, to be able to consider again, the idea that like you can, because I think that for a lot of people, when they struggle with addiction, if one believes in a soul, it can feel soulless at times. You know, it can feel like, if one believes in humanity, it can feel like one has lost their humanity for some reason. You know, again, that idea of like, I'm erasing myself. That's a very inhumane concept, right? It's not respectful of oneself and, you know, one's soul. And the idea that there are other people who have been through that or are going through that and can still kind of support you as a person who's going through that, because, you know, and to say like, I can see the humanity in you. I can see, you can't see it, but yeah. I can see the humanity. I see the soul. I see the higher power that you might not be seeing right now. And I'm not going to push it on you. I'm not going to whatever. I'm just here alongside of you. Right. Again, that getting back to that, like when you wish upon a star, the idea that like, what if everybody knew, hey, we are all now going to look on the star, right? We're all going to listen to So Far Away together and yearn for something. And I kind of feel like, again, that concept of the caretaker is a good way of figuring out like, well, who is that? You know, is this person a good caretaker for me? Are they a good external embodiment of what I want to be doing internally?
Yes. I think it's important to think too of the, when you talk about the soul or, I think a lot of us are traumatized by religion, you know, in some way or another. So I think it's important to talk about God and to talk about the soul and these things in a completely open context, you know, with absolutely no worldly religious beliefs pinned to them, you know. And that's not saying I don't know what is, at the end of the day, what's real and what's not. But there's so many things that are man-made that humans try to superimpose just to try to deal with the idea of God or whatever. You know, it's like that I think that if we, the more we try and step back from all that and think about this, the true nature of the soul or whatever, the true nature of consciousness and how much it exists outside of everything, and I think, again, that's something I think each of us can begin to touch on the more that we let the steam out of the bottle and talk about it and meditate and spend time with ourselves, seeing there's something alive here that is beyond, so far beyond this human thing that we're all a part of, and you know, it's something we won't be able to figure it out fully, you know, this lifetime or whatever. I mean, who knows? I mean, maybe somebody will, but it's so vast. I don't think we're supposed to be able to, you know. That's like part of the reason we're here.
Yeah, and it's interesting because to some degree, the kind of religion vibe or the nature of a closed religious vibe where there's right and wrong. I mean, I was in grad school when EMDR first came out, and I remember how critical people were, whether directly or behind the scenes. They're like, this, what is this? You know, the you waving the finger, and you're like, you know, it doesn't end. Years and years later, now it's there's research behind it and it's accepted. Same thing with mindfulness. You know, it's hard to remember that there was a time where mindfulness was not considered a mainstream part of psychology to a degree. It was kind of that, right. It was like an Eastern philosophical thing. And we've had so many examples where people have, you know, to some degree challenged orthodoxy. And we think about like how much better it would have been if we were open. I myself don't exclude myself from that, because I can often be very critical. I hear something where I'm like, you know, I'm like, that's bullshit or whatever. Sometimes I feel like I'm right. And sometimes I look back and be like, did I need to go about it that way? Like if I had stayed a little bit open,
yes,
maybe I would have just said, all right, well, what, you know, let me listen, let me learn. And I think that's such an important part, again, of being that caretaker quality and being caretaker to each other. Just say like, well, how much do you lose by just listening and thinking, well, maybe there's a part of it that makes sense. You know, maybe there's a piece of it that you can take away.
Like, yep.
You know, even if you don't think mindfulness as a, you know, lifestyle makes sense to you, well, but maybe just sort of controlling your breathing and, you know, sort of having relaxation, maybe that's okay. You
right.
know? And so
right.
it's very tough that you bring up this thing with religion, because we tend to do that a lot. You know, we tend to like put people through these, if there's something different, it's almost like we put them through a hazing of some kind.
Yeah, it's weird, because I feel like our job should be to stay open and let things go. You know, like keep growing, keep evolving. You know, that's the mission. But I think people forget too, there's a lot of the reason people cling so tightly and the reason people don't want you to change. Religion is big business. There's a lot of money to be made there, you know, and if you're changing and you're turning and you're leaving and not keeping your mind closed, people are not going to make as much money off of you, you know, and I think there's this part that there's the thing of that don't want to let go and don't want to change and don't want to be open and don't, you know, there's all of this clinging and all of this desperation that's held up in this physical world, you know, it's like held up in just the people that are so deeply lost in the experience of being human that they're clinging to these things or whatever. And I think it's like, yeah, we all need to like relax, open, evolve, keep moving. And I think it's always a warning to me if there's a sign that somebody doesn't want to evolve or they don't want to listen or they don't want to change. That to me is like a warning. If you don't want to wake up, why? You know, why is that there? That to me is a red flag. If you want to stay asleep in the old patterns of the past that clearly aren't working for anyone anymore, except, you know, 4 or 5 rich billionaires that own everything, you know, it's working for them. But other than them, it's like, and it's not working for them either when you look at them and see the deep unhappiness in their energy that comes out, the deeply troubled. But it's like, yeah, that I think it's all of our job to keep letting go, keep evolving, keep opening, you know, opening up to love.
Yeah, and that can happen, I think, interpersonally as well, you know, even in the people with the best of intentions. You know, sometimes we can feel as though we can't quite put a finger on it, but it's like, I feel like I'm part of someone else's agenda. Like I need to play a certain role, you know, like whether or not, okay, I need to be the scapegoat. I need to be the clown. I need to be the weird one. You know what I mean? I need to be the hero maybe, you know? Yeah, and it's like, there's all of these, and you can almost feel it, and you can't really put your finger on it, but it's like, when you have that feeling like, okay, if I'm a good caretaker, I don't want to reify things too much, just because, you know, and as an artist, a lot of people will talk about this. It's like, listen, if I have this song that's great that you like, or I have the style that you like, that's fantastic. And, you know, maybe again, from a career perspective, it's like, look, I'll play those songs at a concert and I want you to keep listening and thank you. But I'm also evolving, and sometimes even fans can sometimes get a little like, hey, I wanted the early, you know, stuff, or I wanted the stuff with my morning jacket. What about this? What's going on with the solo stuff? And that can be very difficult because people have agendas for us.
Yeah. I mean, I think for the longest time, I was so lost in that, right? If I'm trying to define my entire self-worth by the success or failure of my music career, oh, just so much misery and so much heartache and so much roller coaster of, oh my God, somebody said it was really good. I must be so good. Oh my God, somebody said it sucked. I must be such a piece of shit. It's like that. I think, I don't know why I like variety so much, but I just do. You know, and I think that's one thing that, like, whether you love or hate any of the music that I've made, I try to do a lot of different things. And I think I've realized, just by doing that, that no matter what I do, somebody's always going to not like it, and somebody's also going to like it. And that's kind of freeing. And I try to tell that to artists and musicians whenever, if they ask me for advice or whatever. And I try to tell people, just do what your soul is telling you to do. Listen to your heart, because you already have your answer. It's already there. Somebody's not going to like it, and somebody's going to like it. You know, and it doesn't matter. Yeah, every time we put out anything, you automatically have your answer. You know, like if we try something new, there's like people that are like, man, I really like this new direction. This is so cool. And there's other people like, this is so stupid. What's wrong with them? You know, it's like, and I think if you let go of that stuff and just know, and that, I think that's true for us in everything we do in our entire lives, right? Talking about what we were talking about earlier, it's like you have your soul speaking, and if your soul is saying, oh, I'm not happy in my job, I need to change, you know, I need to do a new career field, and you listen to that and you follow that, you're going to get reactions from all of your friends and family of both directions. Somebody's going to be like, I don't know if that's so smart for you to leave your job. You got a pretty good job. And then there's going to be somebody else that's going to be like, oh, you're so brave for following your heart and trying this new career field. You know, so I think that's like why we have to get more in touch with our compass, with our conscience, with our soul or whatever, because it's going to lead us where we need to go. If we spend time worrying about what other people are thinking, we're really like trapping ourselves even further in the maze, because you're always going to get both sides.
Jim, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I really appreciate you being open. You're a fantastic mental health advocate, and I know this conversation is going to help people. And best with your career and all your advocacy. I hope we get a chance to talk again.
Me too. Thank you. Thanks so much for doing the podcast, and thanks for having me.
So there it is. Jim James of My Morning Jacket talking about trusting himself on his mental health journey and his struggle with depression. Now, there's so much to take away from the conversation with Jim, but one thing I want to focus on was something that we can learn from Jim about trusting ourselves on our mental health journey. As Jim and I talked, one of the main things that I came to understand was that he had a very curious and open mind to a variety of potential treatment approaches that may help him manage depression and other issues that he may face. And this open-mindedness manifested in things like just being open to getting help, talking to a new potential therapist, or investigating different types of treatment. Incidentally, this was also how he approached his music to a degree, in being open to working with a new producer. And this is incredibly difficult. Just like we are very sensitive to opening up regarding our mental health, we are often very sensitive about opening up about our creative process, especially when our creativity is also our livelihood, as is the case with Jim. And so the key here is that trust can't be based on positive outcomes. We can't trust ourselves only when we accurately understand what we need and effectively go for it and get it. We can't only trust ourselves when our thoughts, feelings, and behaviors are exactly what we want them to be and need them to be for our long-term health and well-being. And we can't only trust ourselves if we are incredibly consistent in our scheduling and follow through in our coping. The trust is not based on preferred outcomes. The trust is based on the commitment to trying, to being open to learning, which often means making big mistakes. And in that context, when we struggle with depression, anxiety, addiction, or whatever we face, we don't stop trusting ourselves because our efforts and outcomes aren't optimal, or even when we become hopeless and can't see a way out. Our trust is based on knowing that as soon as we can, we will try, and we will learn how to optimize our understanding of ourselves, our goals, and our coping to give us the best chance to be our best selves on our mental health journey. I want to thank Jim for this wonderful conversation. This season of Going There is brought to you by Johnson & Johnson, who believes that health is everything. Their strength in healthcare innovation empowers them to build a world where complex diseases are prevented, treated, and cured, where treatments are smarter and less invasive, and solutions are personal. Through their expertise in innovative medicine and medtech, they are uniquely positioned to innovate across the full spectrum of healthcare solutions today to deliver the breakthroughs of tomorrow and profoundly impact health for humanity. Learn more at www.jnj.com, at Janssen US, and at JNJINNOVMED on Twitter. And I, of course, want to thank Consequence Podcast Network and Sound Mind Live for including me in this wonderful project. And thanks to Pete Wilson and the Rooks for letting us use their song, I Know. If you are struggling with anxiety, depression, or addiction and are looking for help, please call the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration National Helpline at 1-800-622-4357. If you're thinking about harming yourself and want to seek help, please contact the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline at 988. You may also go to the Sound Mind Live and Consequence websites for more information. So be healthy, be safe, and be kind to yourself and others. See you next time at the crossroads.
Hey, it's Kyle Meredith, host of the Kyle Meredith With podcast, presented by WFPK at WFPK.org and the Consequence Podcast Network. It's a series that puts the spotlight on iconic musicians and actors, inviting them to drop by and talk about their latest projects, whether it's albums, TV shows, films, or beyond.
I'm going to say something I don't want to say. Here it goes. Without Spinal Tap, there is no Tenacious D.
Whoa. Man.
We get great stories and the biggest scoops from people like Garbage's Shirley Manson, the 1975's Matty Healy, Jack Black and Kyle Gass of Tenacious D, Maya Hawke, Kiefer Sutherland, and everyone in between. New episodes arrive every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, so it's a great way to keep up with your favorite artists and discover some new ones. You can find Kyle Meredith With on the Consequence Podcast Network or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, and welcome to Long Time No See, the podcast. Each week, we'll be pairing two blindfolded comedians who've agreed to sit down with a mystery guest. I'll be putting them on the spot with a series of questions about their careers, lives, and opinions. Without further ado, please remove your blindfolds and introduce yourself.
Hey, I'm Michael.
Hi, Andrea.
I have to be honest with you, I am so relieved to see a Jew.
Do you have any irrational fears? What's the worst fad you were into? Is there any job that you would be terrible at?
Underwater welder?
Don't say that about yourself.
Do you guys have any useless talents?
I kicked one of those delivery robots.
What? You kicked one?
Yelling. I kick those all the time.
They have names on them.
Good.
I can make smoke come out of my mouth with nothing.
Do it.
You want to see it?
What the f***? Are you a dragon?
Out now, Long Time No See the Podcast, Season 2. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.